Well, as we just heard, our gospel passage today from Matthew comes from the Sermon on the Mount and from the section that just follows the Beatitudes. As Marta mentioned last week, it's always helpful to slow down and to reflect upon passages like this one that we have heard many times before and may feel very familiar with. The Sermon on the Mount has often been described as Jesus preaching on the Law of Moses. In very good rabbinic tradition, Jesus talks about the law and then he teaches about it. For example, Jesus will quote something from the law like, "You have heard it said that you shall not murder, but I say to you that even if you're angry, you will be liable to judgment." And many commentators have described Jesus' teaching on the Sermon on the Mount as a kind of intensification of the law. So we hear over and over again in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus will describe the Law of Moses, and then he will intensify it. So, for example, Jesus says, "You have heard it said to love your neighbor and hate your enemies, but I say to you, love your enemies." Each time Jesus recites the law, he makes it even harder to uphold. And today's text, he says, "Whoever breaks one of the least of these commandments will be called least in the kingdom of heaven." And then we heard at the very end of the passage, he says, "Unless your righteousness exceeds that of the scribes and Pharisees, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven." One of the things that Jesus had noticed was that even though the scribes and the Pharisees were very accomplished at following the law, they were at the same time breaking the very heart of the commandments. They often loved rule following at the expense of loving people, and all of their intense rule following had not managed to change their hearts. But I think if we're honest with ourselves, if I'm honest with myself, there's something about Jesus intensifying the law that can feel to us a little bit depressing or even a little bit demoralizing. If you've ever read your way all the way through Matthew chapters 5 through 7, you can easily end up with the feeling, as I often do, of how can I ever even hope to live up to all of these teachings given by Jesus? Now, it can help to know that the Sermon on the Mount often fits into the pattern of Jesus using hyperbole, which is one of his favorite ways of teaching. Jesus loved hyperbole, so we hear in other places about tree trunks sticking out of people's eyes and camels threading the eye of a needle. But even if we don't take the hyperbole literally, it still does not lessen these very intense commands. Jesus says in our text today that not one letter of the law, not one stroke of the letter will pass from the law until all is accomplished. So Jesus in no way lessens the demands of the law, and if anything, he raises the bar. He intensifies the law of Moses to the point that none of us can possibly obtain it. I mentioned before that this can sometimes leave us feeling demoralized, but that happens if we look both at our own behavior and at the behavior of other Christian individuals and groups that we see. Jesus says, "Give to everyone who asks. Love your enemies. Never hate. Always forgive. Welcome persecution." But if we look around at collective Christian behavior, that's not often the behavior that we see. I was helped very much in my own personal reaction to the Sermon on the Mount by a writer that I like a lot named Philip Yancey in his book Soul Survivor, which had the subtitle of How My Faith Survived the Church. I taught a class on that book before, and if you were part of that class, some of this may sound familiar, because Yancey talks a lot about the same themes. In the book, he describes growing up in a racist, fundamentalist, very ungracious church, and when he became a young adult, his upbringing almost destroyed his faith. But he also describes that what helped bring him back to the faith was the influence of a number of very authentic, committed Christians, and he describes them in the book. And two of those Christians were featured in a single chapter, which I think was one of the best chapters in the whole book. Both of them were 19th century Russian writers, and they were Leo Tolstoy and Fyodor Dostoevsky. And in the start of the chapter, Yancey describes the same dilemma that I've been talking about, that Jesus teaches just an impossibly high standard that none of us can possibly reach. Yancey wrote that it personally bothered him in his own life, but also as he looked around and saw Christians not living up to this standard. And he said that very much included himself. He said, "For every gracious, kind-spirited Christian, I can also point to a proud, mean-spirited, judgmental one. And often the most intense and severe Christians were the least attractive, getting caught up like the Pharisees in their own self-righteousness." But what helped Yancey in this were these two Russian writers who helped him wrestle with this huge gap between life as it should be and life as it is, between the theory of faith and its practice, between the absolute ideals that both Jesus and the law of Moses set for us and just our inability to meet them. So Yancey started the chapter talking about Leo Tolstoy, who was not only an incredible writer, but who really deeply tried to live out the Sermon on the Mount. During his life as aristocrat, he freed his serfs, the Russian slaves. He gave away his copyrights. He sold off his estate, often to help the poor or those in need or in a crisis. At other times, he gave up hunting, tobacco, alcohol, all to live up in his own way to the Sermon on the Mount. And in doing all these things and in practicing and writing about nonviolence, he had a huge impact on Mahatma Gandhi and Martin Luther King Jr. and on nonviolent protest around the world. But at the very same time, Tolstoy was a deeply unhappy person, often in his own journals to the point of being suicidal. His personal relationship with his family were often cold and unloving, and his family complained about his lack of affection. In his personal life, Tolstoy never found any peace. Philip Yancey wrote that he felt personally sad when he read Tolstoy's personal reflections, in that they depicted a tortured Christian who, in the end, just collapsed from moral exhaustion. One of Tolstoy's other biographers described that his religion was ultimately a thing of law rather than of grace, and that his faith revealed to himself his own inadequacy, and he could not ultimately trust in God's grace. Now, very much in contrast to Tolstoy, Yancey was also exposed to the life and writings of Fyodor Dostoevsky. And while Tolstoy's personal efforts at living out the faith were very admirable, Dostoevsky's personal life was just a complete mess, completely broken. His early life began, he was a young intellectual, and he had joined a group that was critical of the Russian Tsar's rule. And the group, including Dostoevsky, were captured, and they were condemned to death. And at one point, Dostoevsky was actually lined up in front of a firing squad with his hands bound behind him. But it had all been a setup. At the last minute, the sentence of death was commuted, and one of the prisoners with him had a complete mental breakdown, and he never recovered from it. And Dostoevsky himself was then sentenced to 10 years of prison in Siberia. But during those years in prison, Dostoevsky was given a copy of the New Testament, most of which he memorized, and he discovered a newfound faith. And in the midst of all of his suffering, he just found this new discovery of the gospel. Dostoevsky's personal life still remained filled with all kinds of failings. He had a severe gambling addiction and a severe drinking problem. And yet, throughout his life, Fyodor Dostoevsky held on to this fundamental discovery of God's grace. Yancey points out that even though Tolstoy had everything, he wound up angry and bitter, where Dostoevsky lost everything, but he ended up fundamentally grateful for the gift of the gospel that had been given to him. So what does all of this talk about the absolute ideals and then the absolute grace have to say to us here today as we live our lives as Christians? I think it has a lot to say to us, both as individuals, individual Christians, and also as a community of faith. As individuals, I think what we learn from the Sermon on the Mount and from the lives of Tolstoy and Dostoevsky is that while we will never measure up to God's perfect ideal, we do not have to. That is really the only way for any of us to resolve the tension that exists between these high ideals of the gospel and the grim reality of ourselves. So Yancey points out Tolstoy kind of got it half right, that anything that makes us feel comfort with God's moral standard is a deception. Jesus never lowered God's ideal and reminds us that not one letter of the law will be lessened. But importantly, Dostoevsky got the other half right. Anything that separates us from God's forgiving love is also a deception. No one lives up to the ideal. We're all made for that which is just too big for us. But it's our incompleteness that forces us to fall upon God's mercy. Jesus never lowered God's ideal, but he gave grace to everyone who asked for it and everyone who accepted it, to a woman caught in adultery, to a thief on the cross, to Peter and to the disciples, and by extension to all of us. None of us, nobody here, nobody will ever reach God's ideal. And the Sermon on the Mount forces us to recognize that great distance between us and God, and that we are all ultimately desperate. But having fallen from that ideal, there's no place for us to turn but to the supporting net of God's absolute grace. And this is true not just for us as individuals, but also for us as a community of faith. At times as a church, I think this is true of any church these days, we can feel times beleaguered or drained. It's easy to feel like the world just pays absolutely no attention to the presence of the church, whether here on the corner of Coburg and Harlow or throughout the world. In a way, we're not all that different from the early churches in the early centuries that were very small. They had the vision of God, but they often felt overpowered and outnumbered and overlooked. And we can sometimes feel like a very small group of people trying with very mixed results to live out an alternative life, but we're living in the middle of such a fast-changing culture that neither appreciates us or understands us. And it can be hard as individual Christians and as a church to maintain confidence sometimes in what we're doing. In the middle of a busy and noisy world, Jesus says what the church is doing is so, so important. When we donate food or collect food for the hungry, when we gather together to worship Almighty God, when we try to live life as a community and to put up with each other's flaws and problems, what we are doing really, really matters. You heard earlier in the passage today, Jesus saying that a city on a hill cannot be hid. And that reminds me, if you imagine how even a small flickering light of a hilltop village at night can be seen for miles around. Even if we struggle to live up to this impossible ideal, as individuals or as a church, just the fact that we are here, that the church continues, is a sign to the world of the presence of Jesus Christ and a message to a very busy and noisy world that there is just a whole other story going on. Even if we struggle, even if we're not perfect as people or as a community, even if we do not fully live up to the absolute perfection laid out in the Sermon on the Mount, our proclamation of God's saving grace through Jesus Christ stands as a beacon for the whole world to see. Amen.